Welcome to the Open Paddock Podcast, openpaddock.net. This is episode 167 for December 4th, 2012. Gentlemen, we are on the edge of the end of the world here, according to the minds. We have, what, two episodes left before the destruction of our planet?
Yeah. Okay. You know what's going to be worse, though, than the destruction of our planet?
All those... Milkaduno's coming back to IndyCar?
Yes. No. All those crazy Facebook and Twitter posts that we're going to see proclaiming I posted exactly at 12:12:12 p.m. at 12 on 12:12:12.
Yeah. Excuse me.
That would have been funnier if I could have got it out with a straight face, but I couldn't.
I don't think anybody can say that with a straight face.
Yeah.
You know, I actually got to see the physicist Neil deGrasse Tyson once at a thing here in Portland, and it was really funny. He was like, going, yeah, you know, this whole Mayan calendar thing, the Mayans didn't factor in leap year. So based on that, the world should have ended a year and a half ago.
Sweet.
According to Harold Camping, it should have ended in May. But then that was wrong, so it was supposed to end in August after that, I think.
Yeah, I think he's said the end of the world is going to be, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting how some Christians go about their theology when the Bible says no man knows the day or the hour except the Father in heaven, and then the Christian guy gets up there and says, I know, but the Bible says nobody knows.
Well, I'd just like to take this opportunity to invite all the Open Paddock listeners to a party that I'm throwing on that day. I will be providing special wardrobe for you to wear. I mean, I got all these white pants and white shirts, and we've got these really cool Nike shoes for everybody to wear. We got plenty of beds, lots of Kool-Aid. It's going to be awesome. Everybody's welcome to come over.
Nice.
The voices that you hear with me tonight, I'm Kevin Neely, by the way. You have got Mike Shaw. Say hello, Mike Shaw.
Hello, Mike Shaw.
And you've got Mike Wetzel.
Hi, everybody.
Gentlemen, do anyone have interesting drink choices tonight?
I'm back to my Rogue Spruce Gin.
Oh, sweet.
Good stuff. I gotta figure out what to have after this, though. Sounds like you guys were mentioning some good gins from your neck of the woods that I might have to try once I finish off this bottle.
We might have to get you hooked up there, Mike, with some tasty Blue Coat gin. But for myself this evening, I am a very lucky guy because according to Breckenridge Brewery, I am lucky me. I'm having their Lucky You IPA.
The only Alabama-based distilled spirit that I can personally think of is Kaneka Ridge whiskey. And unfortunately, it's a Tennessee mash whiskey, which are, in my opinion, absolutely disgusting. Yes, that includes Jack Daniels. Yes, that includes George Dickel. And it always amazes me when people try to act tough shooting Jack Daniels. And I'm like, compared to Kentucky bourbon or Irish whiskey, that tastes kind of like water that someone may have pooed in.
Wow. I'm not a big fan of Jack Daniels myself.
Yeah.
Tonight, though, I have upgraded from my Diet Mountain Lightning that I was on last week. Mm-hmm. And this week we have Mellow Yellow Zero.
Sweet. Wow. That was a name brand. Look at you.
It was on sale at Publix.
Nice.
Well, we have lots of great stuff in store for you tonight. And I think we're going to lead off with, honestly, one of the more interesting pieces of racing info that I've heard in quite some time. And that is Eldora Speedway will be hosting a NASCAR Camping World Truck Series race on the High Bank Dirt Half Mile owned by one Mr. Smoke.
This is going to be sweet. I mean, the Truck Series is all but irrelevant these days. It's kind of going the way of, well, IndyCar, but that said,
I might actually watch that.
There you go.
A dirt oval? Hell yeah.
You give people a reason to watch, not by the fact that you're doing everything that NASCAR does already, but you know what? One of the things that I think that they should do with the Truck Series and the Nationwide Series is more take them to track events separate from Cup, because those can be big events for small tracks. And it can be a big deal for small tracks having those events. Example, Eldora Speedway. They packed 20,000 people in that place for the Kings Royal, a big wing sprint car race. They pack 20,000 people in there for the World 100. They pack 20,000 people in there for the Prelude to the Dream, which is the NASCAR. Well, I shouldn't say NASCAR, but it's the Invitational late model race that they do, where all these NASCAR guys come in and do it on a Wednesday night. Well, they're doing this on a Wednesday night before the Brickyard race in Indianapolis. And why do you ask Wednesday night? Well, Wednesday night, all these big names, they're not racing. So it's a good time to have it because you can get some of these big names to show up.
Yeah, you can't see, right.
I'm going to tell you, too, I thoroughly enjoy watching the Truck Series. To me, it is the best racing of all the NASCAR 3 Premier Series, so to speak. But the problem has been, they've gotten away from where the roots of that series was and what it was supposed to be. Because we're talking about a series that used to race at tracks like Evergreen and Flemington and I-70 Speedway and Mansfield, Memphis, North Wilkesboro. They did the road course at Portland. I mean,
yeah, now more and more that's what the Welland Modified Series does.
Yeah. And the Modified Series is some great racing, too.
That's some good stuff. I've really enjoyed watching some of those.
And I think that's been a problem in general for NASCAR since their big growth spurt, is they've gotten away from what got them where they were. And I'm hoping that the Truck Series brass is realizing this and seeing what an opportunity they have with Eldora to reach back out to the grassroots that supports that style of racing in the U.S., which is your short track crowd.
Yeah, and, Eldora has one of the strongest short track crowds in the country. Eldora and Knoxville are hands down the best short tracks in this country. And, you can't get a better spokesman than Tony Stewart.
Oh, no.
So you're going to team together a lot of good things there. And you end up with, Eldora is a great place to see a race. I've been there several times and thoroughly enjoy it when they don't do crappy track prep, which has happened in the past. But
now, IndyCar fans, I've seen you talk on a website that we're not going to name. Let's call it Voldemort.com. On Voldemort.com, they like to say, IndyCar needs to do the same thing. Let's take IndyCar back to Springfield. All right, let's think about that one more time here, okay? Let's take IndyCar back to Springfield. Now, hello, McFly. Can you imagine someone trying to run a DW12 on dirt?
I would fully support somebody trying, but you know what? Dirt is for tube frames. It is not for these cars. These are formula cars now. It's they evolved so much over the years, putting the engine where it belongs in the rear of the car, all that kind of stuff.
Maybe make a global rallycross stop at the short ovals. There you go.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
What if we took the old IR7s that are left and put the engine in the front and raced an IndyCar race on dirt?
Yeah, I love the short track races. I love the USAC Sprint cars and Silver Crowns and Midgets. I watch more of those races in person than I do anything else. That said, it's an entirely different world. And you can't take these cars and try and put them on dirt. You can't take these drivers and try and put them on dirt. You would have to create a series from scratch to do something like that. And I would fully watch and support that series. However, it is not the IndyCar series, and it's not their place.
And I would just like to point out before anyone thinks that I was for one bit serious, yes, I know you cannot mount an engine on the front of an IR7. Because there is no room for that. I'm not stupid. I'm from Alabama. All right.
Well, what you do is you have the driver compartment changed around so that the driver's legs extend behind the driver instead of in front, and then that gives you room to put something in front.
Kind of like a drag, kind of like a drag cycle.
Yeah, kind of like a death trap.
That's Formula E Championship, slated to begin in 2014 with confirmed events in Rome and Rio and two events in the U.S.
Yeah, they're saying that they're going to be announcing two races in the U.S. And I quote, "We are going to be announcing two races in the U.S. in really big cities." Don't know what that means. Dayton?
Now, it makes me wonder, you remember how a couple of weeks ago we were talking about a U.S. Formula 3 series that they, or a, I'm sorry, a North American Formula 3
GP2, GP3-ish, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. I wonder, do you think maybe this is kind of incorporated with that, perhaps?
I don't know. I mean, the way they're going about this, running in Rome, running in Rio, those are marquee cities. And if they're running in Rome, if they're running in Rio, and they don't have anything else announced in those cities, I'm assuming these are meant to be premier events, you know, mm-hmm. with this, the leading class. I'm curious what they're going to do.
I'm looking at some information on them right now, and for those of you that are not familiar with Formula E, that is a Formula single-seater series developed by FIA with electric-powered cars. Luca Degrassi actually was the test driver that helped develop the cars. McLaren is providing the motor, the transmission, and all the electronics as well.
See, and we could get American Tesla involved in that.
Ooh, that is a good idea. I saw a Tesla in the wild for the first time yesterday. Very cool.
Have you seen the new Tesla Model S?
No, I haven't.
A little bit of a segue, but they've now developed the original Tesla was based off of a little Lotus Elise. Mm-hmm. The new one is a complete in-house redesign from the ground up. They sell them actually. They don't go to do dealerships. You'll find the sales shop at your local shopping mall.
Yeah, that's a different model, and it's a good model. I mean, you get these cars in front of people instead of making them come to you. You just show it to them where they
what's
least
funny
expect
is the
it.
Dealers in some states tried to sue them for not being able to get them, it was kind of interesting. But thankfully, Elon Musk won that bout. And no, it's an amazing car. You basically buy the car based on how much range on the batteries you want.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the thing is, it's a luxury car. The shortest range one is like 100 miles or something like that, and mm-hmm. that one runs like 56 grand or something like that. So right there with BMW's Mercedes, and it's of equal or better quality, mm-hmm. just not with the range, of course. So, and then you can go all the way up to their highest end model, which can go like 220 miles, I think, on the batteries. So it's quite the interesting thing, and the performance, it'll outdo a BMW M5 in a drag race.
Yeah.
So,
and while we're on some other topics, there's one thing I'd like to bring up real quick that we didn't have a note about, and that's congratulations to Connor Daly for winning round 5 of the MRF Challenge at the Bud Circuit yesterday. Mm. He sat on pole for the weekend's only qualifying session from Friday, took command of the race from the green light, pulled away to a 3-second cushion. When the pace car came out for an accident, when the race restarted, he was away again and won by 3.4 seconds. So, Connor, that's a Renault-powered Dallara car, by the way, that they run in that series. It was at the Bud Circuit in India. So some Americans overseas still doing good, looks like.
Well, that's very good to see.
Oh, yeah.
And Connor plays into our discussions a little bit later this evening, so we'll leave that for the IndyCar segment.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting news that's popped up about him lately.
Yeah.
But for now, it's on to Rally. And in the WRC, back to Formula One, a former Formula One driver seems to be in a little bit of demand for 2013. Tell us about what's up with Robert Kubica.
Kubica, however you want to say his name, you know, he's proven to be extremely fast when it comes to rally. I mean, that's always been his passion other than Formula One. And even though he was injured in a rally accident a couple of years ago down in Italy, he's come back and, apparently he had a tough time with the hand control in a car like a F1. It's just way too hard to steer. But with the power steering and other aids that he's kind of got with the rally cars, he's, you know, still been able to compete. And so this, the end of this year, he did a couple of events. He actually got to drive what was formerly Sebastian Loeb's car, one of his Citroen C4s, was racing an event, and he just dominated. I mean, he was minutes ahead of the cars behind him, and unfortunately, though, due to a bad pace note, ended up on the final day going off, and the car actually ended up catching fire, and they got out okay, but it burst into flames. And it's nothing but a smoking hulk now, but he really proved his pace, and everybody's been watching him. The first event he did also earlier this fall, he dominated that one and won as well, and everybody was really keeping an eye on him and think that his next step just might be into the WRC. He did test a Ford Fiesta RS WRC in the summer, but we're not really sure what's going to happen for 2013, but we'll have to wait and see on that one. But he's definitely looking to go maybe more the rally route, and because Formula One just might not work out ever since his injury.
Yeah, as I understand, there was a lot worse damage to his arm than they first expected. And he's having a... I mean, it was basically cut in half.
Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah.
And the muscle hasn't redeveloped like expected. And even though I was never one of the Robert Kubica fanboys like a lot of people were, I was not convinced that he was the next big thing. I was more convinced that he was like maybe a Jean Alesi, Gerhard Berger top, as opposed to a Senna or a Schumacher. But it's still a shame to see that happen to him. And hopefully he can definitely find a place in rally where he can let his talent show through.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, rally has obviously a lot of promising up-and-comers. But one that won't be seen, at least for 2013, as we know it. Sadly,
who's that? Today,
it's official that Petter Solberg will not be in the WRC for 2013. Some people have tried to say it's his retirement. He insists it is not retirement. He just couldn't. He wanted to drive for free, but you know, the teams these days, they need somebody to come in with some backing. So, and the Qatar M Sport team wasn't willing to take a risk on him. He had just such a terrible season with all the offs and everything last year or this year, and they just weren't going to take that risk. And so without him paying for his own seat, he vowed that he would not pay for a seat. Interestingly, though, he was talking last week to Jari Matti Latvala, and they're on a phone call chatting with each other, and he happened to say that, you know, the things with the WRC doesn't work out, he's going to go and do Rallycross. Now, Petter hasn't announced which Rallycross championship he'd like to be a part of. Is that going to be the European Rallycross, or is he going to maybe cross over the pond and head on over here to the States and check out Global Rallycross? You know, he's got a lot of followers. We know they can at least fund a program like that. Obviously, they're smaller events, not probably as expensive to maintain, other than the fact that you're banging doors with other cars. But the way he has been wrecking cars lately, probably doesn't matter. So it'll be interesting to see which route he goes, but it would definitely be cool to see him to come over to the States. I know I'd be a fan to try and get to an event just to watch him drive, because I'm a really big Petter Solberg fan. I think he's an awesome driver.
Yeah, and just thinking back to a couple of years ago, Petter was saying that he wanted to do the Las Vegas IndyCar race. So who knows, right?
He also wants to do the Pikes Peak Hill Climb. He's always claimed that he's been working on a self-developed, you know, his little in-house engineering team is working on a car to do that. He was actually going to maybe do it this year, but Ford said he couldn't. And then there was the fires where they ended up rescheduling it anyway.
Yeah.
So we might see him come to the Pikes Peak Hill Climb this next year as an event here in the States. That'll be interesting.
Personally, I'd love to see Petter maybe take on like Grand Am or ALMS or something like that. I'd love to see him in the 24.
Maybe see him in the Endurance Challenge or whatever that Loeb's going into.
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
I think
see him actually beat Loeb at something.
I think Petter's a perfect fit for World Challenge.
Yeah.
So some of the beating and banging I've seen in that series. Yep, perfect fit. Anyway.
So tell me what happened with Yari Matti Latvala.
So, yeah, Yari Matti, he, you know, the guy that he is, he's all about sharing and giving. And so he decided that, you know, wrecking just all the Ford cars wasn't enough for him. So in his first test with the VW Polo, he had to make sure that he wrecked one of their cars as well. Just, you know, showing the love there. Actually, in all honesty, it wasn't his fault completely. He was in between stages they were testing on. I don't know how lively he was driving. There's not a lot of details on it. But as he was getting ready to go towards the start or the end of one of the areas they had closed off, ended up colliding with a vehicle of some locals on the road. And their car was pretty well damaged. But the VW doctors handled the people and got everybody to the hospital that needed to be right away. Apparently there was a couple of people are injured just minorly. But yeah, he ended up wrecking the car pretty good. But in the end, I think they had two cars there. So they were able to still get testing done later in the day and get more of that ready for the next season. But yep. Definitely already got his marks on another make.
Yeah, it's always bad to see a driver have an incident like that because yeah, I mean, you never know when it's.
I don't know if you remember a year ago when last year's season, when it came down to the end of the WRC, Loeb was ahead of Mikko Hirvonen, who was still with Ford then. And they're both contesting for the title. It came down to that last event. And if Loeb had gone out and Mikko had won, Mikko had actually had the world championship. He had enough points. Well, unfortunately, Mikko had a mistake and ended up breaking his radiator. He goes out. The very next stage, on the transit in between stages, person that was not used to driving the opposite side of the road in Great Britain, in Wales, ended up driving right into the front of Loeb's car as he was in transit.
Yeah,
and that knocked Loeb out, but because he finished, you know, more stages ahead and, you know, had more points at that point, you know, he ended up winning. But it came down to that. If Mikko just held his car together, because of a stupid local, he could have won the championship.
So I see here that
they're a foreigner, but
I see here that Rally America has released their schedule for 2013. What was it looking like?
Yes, I just posted that over the weekend. Very exciting news that they've now added another event. So no longer six events, we now have seven events. One of those we had probably, I believe you guys talked about earlier, is the return of the Lake Superior Performance Rally in Michigan. So that'll be exciting to have that back. I believe the last time it was part of the Rally America series was in 2007, was it? Or maybe it was more recent than that, maybe 2009, something like that. But nice to see that one back. One thing that's notably missing from the list, though, is up here in the Northwest, unfortunately, the Olympus Rally is no longer part of Rally America, at least not for the 2013 season. If you guys remember just a couple months back when that race ran, unfortunately, the fire danger in the Northwest, we have these, I guess you guys call them maybe an Indian summer. We have these really hot months from August through to September. And that race running at the end of September, it had been hot and dry for a long time. The amount of risk to forest fires was so bad. They changed the schedule that spectators are not allowed on the stages to view. There's only one viewing, and that was at a motorsports park, and that was it. So they didn't think because, again, the risk. And then they made the drivers drive as early in the morning as possible. Then they had this huge break in the afternoon when it was hot, and then they had to run at night for the rest of the stages. And it just ended up being kind of a mess. You know, they obviously didn't get the amount of showing the spectator and stuff that they wanted, and it just wasn't a good time. So they said that, you know what, we want to move this back to the spring, the organizers of the Olympus Rally. Well, that didn't kind of fly with the schedule that was already set up with that Rally America was planning for 2013, so it seems. So without being able to figure all that stuff out in the time that they had, they ended up dropping the event. It will still run as a regional event or a local event. It just won't be part of the Rally America series, unfortunately. So Olympus is gone for 2013, but we still have just, you know, a little over a month away. Snowdrift Rally will start out everything in Atlanta, Michigan, which is the ice skating of rally driving, because here in America, no studs on those cars, and they're racing on those stages in Atlanta, Michigan. So, yeah, that's always a fun one to watch. I mean, these guys are just ice skating all over the place.
That's why I can never do rally racing in the United States. Studs are not allowed.
Nice.
That's right, folks. You can reach me at kevin@openpaddock.com. No, I'm just kidding.
Poor Kevin at plentyoffish.com.
Just got to run through the other events real quick. 100 Acre Wood, of course, is still there. One of the favorites for its really fast stages. You just don't get faster in 100 Acre Wood. That's where they actually run into where the cars are just going so fast. They went up against a speed limit for the stages, which is crazy. That'll be held February 22nd and 23rd. Then back to my neck of the woods, we'll have the Oregon Trail Rally, of course, my favorite event, May 3rd through the 5th. Then you have STPR, the Susquehannock Trail Performance Rally in Pennsylvania. That'll be May 31st and June 1st. Then there'll be a little bit of a break for the summer before the New England Forest Rally in Newry, Maine again, and that'll be in July 26th and 27th. Then here's one of the new events, the Ojibwe Forest Rally in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. So that's one of the new events that's been added. And then the final event of the season will be the Lake Superior Performance Rally in Michigan, October 18th and 19th. So it's nice to see a new event added to Rally America. I think the sport's going to grow. It seems like the interest when I've been out to the stages has been growing steadily. Not a huge jump, but one thing that, you know, Ken Block has said that now he's not doing as many events in the WRC, he's going to really focus on doing that Global Rally Cross and Rally America. And I think, you know, for those people that might think that he's just nothing but a showman, well, he's a wonderful ambassador to bring people to come out to the sport.
Yeah. Well, I think Rally America is certainly going to well, how do you put it? For a while, they were running rallycross half the season and then traditional stage rallies the other half of the season, because they wanted to get all the traditional stage rallies in before X Games so that people could qualify for X Games. And then after that was done, they started to throw in the rallycross events. And now that they're not really involved with the rallycross series anymore, I think that's just good for the sport, because to me, they were cutting the schedule because they wanted to be conducive for X Games. And, you know, going back to more events is definitely needed.
So. Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And and like I said, it's great to see the organizers getting involved. And actually even saw a little snippet of there's another rally series, NASA, the North, what the heck is that stand
North
for?
American Sports Car Association.
Thank you. And they're apparently, there's no schedule announced yet, but they said they're going to have a rally championship they're going to create for 2013. I just saw that just come out just yesterday, I think it was. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. But again, now another championship being added, which is kind of interesting. They'll probably stay more East Coast based and not, you know, cover the entire United States. But it'll be interesting to see maybe growth in that, along with Rally America, and who knows, you know, where things go in the future. But things are looking good so far, though. Rally America has been doing well, and increasing its coverage. There's that movie that'll be coming out this next year that'll be cool, where they did a lot of filming with drivers and stuff, part of the Rally America series. I think you guys touched on that earlier in this last year. It's called Easier Said Than Done. There's a guy that's been doing a lot of filming. That's why when I was out at Oregon Trail Rally, I was shocked to see a helicopter go flying by with a guy with a camera hanging out the side. I have never seen at a rally event, you know, other than the WRC in Europe, you know, somebody pay for helicopter coverage. And this guy had this beautiful footage of some of the guys driving the roads out here in the in the Pacific Northwest. You got the beautiful white-capped mountains in the background, and you know, dust flying as they're going over the dirt roads, and it is just epic images. And I can't wait for that film to come out. So,
well, there's definitely a lot of good stuff going on right now in a rally, and it looks like the rally scene is really taking off in the U.S. and a lot of good stuff happening, especially with that Rally America schedule for 2013. Now,
move on to F1.
65-year-old Luca DiMonazzolo blasts 82-year-old Bernie Ecclestone for being an old fuddy-duddy.
Did you like this exchange? This was classic. You know, this kind of comes on the heels of the F1 race, the end of the season, and Ferrari questioned the FIA about the yellow flag incident with Vettel. Did he actually pass under yellow? Was it, you know, what was the situation? Was it under local yellow or was it not? And they went back and reviewed it, and it wasn't. But, you know, Bernie went a little ballistic, and you know what? So did Sebastian Vettel. He said, you know, I won this championship fair and square, and I was up against these people who were doing some dirty tricks, implying that Ferrari was, you know, trying to win the championship in the wrong way. We didn't really talk too much about this, but so what, seeing as how Red Bull has been up against the resource restriction agreement basically since day one of its forming, so who's the dirty trickster? Anyway, sorry, I had to go that way because it's completely off the topic. But anyway, you know, Montezemolo has called Bernie to the carpet because he basically said, hey, you're an old guy. You know what, Ecclestone, you have to show respect for your elders, especially when they get to the stage in which they are no longer in control of what they say. However, old age is clearly incompatible with certain roles and responsibilities.
Bernie responded by saying, huh?
Huh? What'd you say?
What if she wrote on? Leave me alone.
Yeah, this is interesting. I mean, the thing that Bernie fired back, because, well, Ferrari went on and basically they're clearly trying to get their way in F1. And you know, more power to them. They should be able to because of their, you know, precedence in F1. And, you know, they've basically been F1 for a long time. And I think that's slowly started to change over the last few years with Red Bull coming in and basically being the new kid on the block who has just taken the F1 paddock by storm with their really irreverent attitude. And, you know, and then you got McLaren who's coming up as well. Both of those teams are kind of showing up Ferrari currently. But Ferrari is still relying on their past glories. And you can understand, again, Luca's complaining, it cannot be that in this sport you can't test. We've been saying this for a while, and we will repeat it in the appropriate places, so for the moment, I don't want to add anything else. But our patience has run out, so someone needs to think about whether they want Formula One still to have companies that invest and consider it the most advanced research bench for its own cars, as Ferrari has always done since 1950. We are constructors, not sponsors. You got to agree with him on that. Thoughts?
You know, some of the testing bans that a lot of series right now have imposed, to me, are just kind of crazy. But the one strange thing that I've always found about the Formula One testing ban is it's simply you cannot test the current year chassis. I mean, you can... I mean, I remember we were talking in the pre-show about when Tony Stewart test drove Lewis Hamilton's McLaren. Mm-hmm. They even had to pull out a previous year's McLaren to do that. It wasn't the current year McLaren. Mm-hmm. And you know, I understand why they're doing all this. It's to keep costs down. But to me, it looks like, and especially with Formula One, that you know when you get involved in it that it is not a cheap series to run in and that testing costs are going to be astronomical. And I kind of see Luca's point here. I mean, the testing ban is just crazy, but then again, on the other hand, this year we had the best Formula One racing we've had in a very long time.
Yeah.
And you have to think that the ban on testing is preventing teams from – like Ferrari or like McLaren or a Red Bull from just absolutely just dominating like they did in previous years, even though all those groups are still at the top of the charts anyway. I mean, it's just, I don't know.
Well, I can understand the testing ban. The testing ban, the idea is to limit the amount of testing they can do so that smaller teams can find it cost effective for them to battle with the bigger teams. But what it comes down to really, and they've talked about this a lot, is, you know, you can go ahead and set this up for CFD, computational fluid dynamics, and all that kind of stuff. You can do testing still. It just costs a lot more money because you have to have the computer hardware to do it. I don't know, man. How do we put this, though? You know, Ferrari saying it's ludicrous that we can't test cars, says the team that has almost unlimited budget and two test tracks.
Hi, we own the Jello.
Yes. Anyway, but yeah, again, you know, in this article and this situation, he again took this opportunity to blast Bernie for his age. So,
like I said, 65-year-old Luca de Montezemolo calls 82-year-old Bernie Ecclestone a fuddy-duddy.
Yeah, Bernie, you know, his response back is basically, step off girlfriend, 82 isn't too old because I got thousands of ideas. Thousands! Yeah,
Bernie is feeling both fat and sassy.
Yes, indeed. And he did come up with a good point. He said, I remember in my younger years dealing with an 88-year-old gentleman by the name of Enzo. And that seems to put you right in your place there, buddy.
Have a seat, Junior.
Have a seat, yeah. I've been at this longer than you. That said, there is a lot going on behind the scenes in Formula One, and I'm almost ready to lay odds that Bernie is not running F1 when the season starts next year. Because of all this...
He has a lot of controversy riding in his coattails right now.
Yeah, he's got multiple lawsuits against
all kinds
him.
Of stuff.
CVC's been named as a, you know, in this lawsuit against F1. And whatever you want to say about Bernie's management of F1, these are investment bankers that are in charge, and they will make decisions that are good for their investment. And regardless if that's Bernie staying in charge of F1 or making him the sacrificial goat, I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is we all knew this was going to inevitably happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, people get old. People have to retire from what they do. The only funny thing is, you know, there's never been a clear successor to Bernie really step forward, except, I mean, a lot of people have said Zach Brown, but I just don't see that happening.
No, I think Zach is very successful where he's at, and I think he's very far removed from the day-to-day management of Formula One. It's going to be somebody from the inside, but we shall see. Making things even more interesting for next season, the FIA tried to get involved in the Concord Agreement negotiations, and I think they were spurned. They're basically saying, hey, we're managing this multi-billion-dollar sport. We have to pay lots of money to have the right equipment, the ability to properly officiate and judge the series, and we have no revenue from it because Max Mosley sold it away for a song and a dance and a gimp suit to FOM. And they just – I don't know if they were just not able to get traction in those negotiations, but what they did to generate money is they raised the entry fees dramatically. It used to be the entry fee was a flat 309,000 euro entry fee, and now it's gone up significantly. The flat fee is now $500,000 payment up front, and each point is $5,000 per point. $6,000 per point if you are the Constructors' Champion. So that puts Red Bull paying, instead of a 309,000 euro fee, that puts them at 3.26 million for their entry fee for next season.
I guess Caterham and Marussia are pretty solid on what they're going to be paying then.
Yeah, Keter and Marusha, they're pretty easy. I think that's exactly why they chose not to score points this year. They were in a strategic battle this season to see who could not score any points but yet still get that 10th spot. So they get the TV money. And then HRT, it didn't really matter.
So they're going to have like a points auction system at some point there, you know?
Ooh, carbon
points
credits.
Points for sale, points for sale.
Point credits. That'd be awesome. Red Bull, we choose to buy points. We win the championship. Woo!
Oh, dear God.
Going along with that, the FIA has released the entry list for 2013, and at present, and the entry deadline has happened. HRT did not make the entry deadline. That was rumored for a while, but at this point, HRT has nothing to sell. They have no entry in F1, and they have rented shop space. No staff and not a good working design for a car, so HRT goes the way of the dodo, without passing on its legacy to some new no-name team that would fail in 2 years.
Theoretically, the only team that may be interested in buying the HRT chassis and the chassis program is one of those little traveling carnivals that's looking for new bumper cars, because they seem to work pretty well at that.
Maybe that Formula E series needs a chassis.
We know that they glide over gravel pretty well.
Oh, sweet! Yes, that's true. That's true.
Hey, Mike, what about Pasto Maldonado and his future with Williams?
Yeah, he's staying at Williams, along with Pasto Maldonado. Yeah, he's staying with Williams. Brain not working there for a second. Along with new teammate Valtteri Bottas, or something like that.
Yeah, Valtteri Bottas, he's, I've heard his name come up an awful lot, but I was still kind of surprised to see that name pop up at Williams, so I'm wondering if the check cleared, if that's the reason he's the driver.
Yeah, you know how it goes.
Honestly, if I was Williams and I had the money to hire a second pay driver, I would have picked up Haki Kovalainen myself.
Yeah. I don't know. Don't know what their method to their madness is. However, we do know that they are accountable to their stockholders at Williams.
Yeah.
So if this was the incorrect decision, they'll hear about it at their next financial meeting of the team.
I mean, they got to be doing something right. I mean, after the race in Spain earlier this year, they were literally on fire.
Yeah. So remaining to be named, we've got there's a TBA at Lotus. Kimi Raikkonen, of course, is leading that team for next season. However, they have not announced driver number two. Sauber has not announced their drivers. Force India has not announced their drivers. Toro Rosso has not announced their drivers. Caterham and Marussia also have not announced drivers. So there's a lot of TBA or check pending slots left in F1 at the time.
Hey, TBA is a very good driver. He is really stepped up his game lately, and I would like to applaud his efforts.
Indeed.
He's also a good sponsor.
Yeah.
He's a very good sponsor.
And as we mentioned, of course, HRT has failed to meet the deadline. They have failed to make the bell, and, sad days for F1. It's really sad. Yet another entry in the F1 Rejects Hall of Fame.
We'll join the likes of Midland and Manor House and Tyrell and
Orange.
Yeah.
Arrows, right?
That reminds me, there was this I think the name of the game, it was an old Atari game. I want to say it was called F1 Racer Built to Win or something like that, or it may have been Ferrari Formula 1 or something like that. But like all the teams had fake names. And like instead of arrows, you had spears.
Nice.
And instead of Zack Speed, you had Zip Speed, and Awesome. You have Wallace instead of William, and it was really, really, really bad.
Nice.
And speaking of bad, we all know that New Jersey has bowed out of the 2013 schedule, and France with the Porica circuit unable to answer the bell. Guess who might be back? Turkey.
I don't know about this, man. Istanbul's a nice track. It really is. It's not. It's one of the better Tilkydromes, but nobody cared. Nobody showed up, and we had way too many races in the Mideast, and getting rid of one was excellent. So the idea of bringing back in Turkey is kind of disgusting to me. Not just because of having Turkey back on the schedule, which isn't the most awful thing. It'd be great if they got Turkey back and got rid of Hungaroring, because that track is crap. But
I used to think the name of that track was Hungaroring.
Ah, nice.
That's a nice aside.
Yeah, well, anyway, the thing that really kind of gripes me about this is they're talking with Turkey about a 7-year deal. And it's not that I'm against having another race on the schedule next year to fill in New Jersey. What I'm kind of against is filling in another 7-year contract, making it more difficult for new venues to come online because, well, when Bernie has the proper amount of events that meet his, you know, stated desire, any new event that wants to get on the schedule has to pay that much more because Bernie has to make a case to the teams and the teams have to be properly compensated and all that kind of stuff.
So is this bringing Turkey back in? Is that yet another way of trying to get Turkey back into the Eurozone? Is that what the whole plan there is?
I do not know.
Because, that's what I just remember just right around the time that they were, part of the F1 was right when they were just about to become part of the Eurozone. And then, I think that'd probably be a bad idea after economic crash.
Yeah, it is interesting how many governments are teetering on the brink of financial ruin. But then again, they're considering or are hosting F1 races. I mean, there for a while, Greece was considering an F1 race.
That's funny. You know,
that was past summer when this whole crisis was going on.
Oh, so. Yeah. Well, I mean, and they still offer one of, a lot of the events in the Eurozone. It's not free access for, especially for like some of the special stages and the real short ones mm-hmm. for the spectators for rally stuff. But it is still in Greece. It's completely free to attend. And I'm just like, really? You guys are hurting financially. There's still an event there, and free for everybody to attend. I mean, granted, you want to have people there, and I'm all for accessibility. But not even a small nominal fee? I mean...
Yeah.
You have to have organizers and safety officials and stuff, and what?
Seriously, a free will donation at the door would work.
There you go. Can't the soup?
And to me, what's funny is we're going to go back to... We're talking about going back to Turkey when great tracks like, I mean, I don't know which is hosting it this year, if it's Nürburgring or Hockenheim that's hosting the German Grand Prix. Take the other one. I mean, that's two awesome circuits right there.
Red Bull has resurrected the A1 ring as the Red Bull ring. I'd go there.
Yeah. What about Zandvoort? I mean...
Do some work at Imola. Get that thing going. I mean, seriously, there are so many races that we don't need on the schedule, and they're
Mugello.
There. Mugello. Real road courses instead of Tilke fantasies. Oh, well.
Oh, dear God.
Tilke. We'll never get our way in F1. What we want makes far too logical sense, but it doesn't make as much financial sense as some of these other ones do, so.
You know, there's a lot of people talking about how great Circuit of the Americas is mm-hmm. and about how it's the best Tilke Belt track. I mean, and I'm sitting here thinking to myself, let's say like this is the finest turd in the toilet. I mean,
well, I honestly, looking at that racetrack, I think there are just three or four that I would put ahead of it on the schedule right now.
My opinion on Coda, it's like I heard somebody else on another podcast say it's got four turns too many. It needs to be opened up just a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know about that because, I mean, it's again, I'm not a big Formula One follower just yet, but I don't know. I thought it had a great mix of, you know, it had the fast straights and, you know, that kind of off-camber, you know, little twisty in there, and then some real, you know, sharp turns and twisties as well. And, you know, I think it had a little bit of everything. I don't think it was too long.
You're wrong, Mike.
Nah.
If you think about it, any good course is going to have a combination of, you know, where you have to really make that that setup compromise, right? You're gonna have a car that's going to be really set up for those long straights, and it's going to be, you know, really fast, maybe low downforce or whatever. Then you're going to have that guy that gets that extra grip in the corners. So those, they end up kind of meeting in the middle, you know, in those corners. Then they hit the straights and open up, and, you know, I think it makes for really good racing, and I think they got that track right.
It's not bad. I guess I'm just prejudice towards Tilke drones to begin with.
I'll agree with you on that, because you take these classic tracks, you take Spa, you take Monza, you take the Hockenheim ring before they neutered it and turned it into a Tilke drome, back when it used to go through the forest, back when Michael Schumacher said it's a nice drive through the forest, but you're just sitting there waiting for something to break because there weren't any turns. It was just going fast. You know, there are some really nice tracks that used to be on the schedule, but only a couple of them are left where they feel like natural parts of the environment. And now you go to these Tilke abominations, and it's like space age glitz and glamour. It's very different, and it doesn't have that comforting feel of these old tracks. And I would agree
you probably need a good mix of the two.
Yeah, for sure. And I would agree Circuit of the Americas is not one of these return to nature tracks. It looks like the Tilke drones, but it's got a different layout that seems to really work well. If they could grow some trees in Texas, that'd be great, but I don't think that's allowed.
Not in that part of Texas.
they might end up having some people move there that hug the trees, and they don't want that.
We could sprinkle in some natural terrain, some beaten up old trailers, and some scrub brush. That'd make it feel more natural. anyway.
Speaking of natural, let's talk a little IndyCar, gentlemen.
Yeah.
And the biggest news of this week, I don't know if I should say sadly, or if this is actually kind of cool news or not, but seems that Mr. Penske, in his celebrations at the NASCAR awards banquet with his driver Brad Keselowski, threw down the gauntlet, so to speak, to one Mr. Smoke.
Yeah, boy, this will be interesting. Roger basically said you can have one of the best cars on the grid for the Indy 500.
Wow.
Tony,
yeah,
this car is for you. It's really hard to say no to Roger Penske, but we've already seen, you know.
Only one person says no to the captain, and that's Ryan Hunter Ray.
That's what I was going to say. We've already seen that once this year, and if lightning strikes twice, I don't know, man. And
that's when, if you're Smoke, you've really got to think long and hard about that. I mean, you are never going to get this opportunity again.
Yeah. See, it's kind of a weird situation because they just announced, you know, a couple weeks ago that Danica would not be racing the 500 this year.
Oh.
Driving for Tony Stewart.
Hold on, let me go get some.
No, I'm not trying to make this into a, you know, love fest on Danica, but if the team boss tells you, no, you're not driving the 500, and then the team boss goes and drives the 500, how does that look?
Pretty awesome, as long as it's Smoke.
Yeah, indeed. Go pound sand.
I'm guessing Dear Danica didn't get the invite.
Yeah, well, be like back in the day when Danica was getting all hissy with Dan Weldon. And Dan just kept backing off. He's like, I don't want to hit her. You know? and Paul Tracy.
I'm about to point out that that's one of my all-time favorite IndyCar moments, yeah, is Danica running around damn well and yelling at him, and he's like, whatever.
Yeah. Well, I think what qualifies as one of my favorite all-time IndyCar moments is when Paul Tracy said, if that was me, I'd shove her in a trash can.
And he would have.
He would have. He definitely would have.
Indeed. So, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway has definitely joined in with this idea. They started a petition drive. It was up to something like 2,000 names last time I looked. And they've said that they are willing to adjust the start time to accommodate.
I wish they would adjust the start time anyway. Put it back where it used to be.
Oh, which time? Because it used to be 1, and then they moved it to 11, and then last year was at noon.
See, I always liked the 11 o'clock start.
Well, but then you get into what is actually the correct time, because noon was actually the correct time because of the time zone shifting, and Indiana no longer has Indiana dumb time.
Look, I don't care what Indiana does. I say the race has to be at 11 Central Time.
Nice.
That's it. I'm writing Jeff Dunn.
Well, the later right you guys do it over there, the more I can sleep in over here on the Pacific Coast.
Nice.
See, that's another reason it needs to be at 11, is I think Mike needs to be up with us.
You know, it's hard enough to get up with the or listen in the middle of the night with Rally or F1 or whatever, you know? You guys have, what? You guys have GMT plus or minus 4, your GMT minus 4. I'm minus 5 or 6. 8.
5 or 6 for me, depending on, because Mr. Witzel there, I believe, is Eastern time. Are you not, Mike?
Yeah, I'm on Eastern.
Yeah, and I'm on Central time. I've heard a lot of contention, though, over the past couple of years about the start time of the race and about how when they push it back to noon, it prevents anybody from doing the double because of the start time in Charlotte. But theoretically, I've actually heard that Smoke could miss the 600 and still qualify for the chase.
Yeah. I mean, there's... It sounds like the IndyCar series is also looking for some help from Charlotte to make this happen in getting them to adjust their start time a little as well. So maybe they're thinking, you know, we go halfsies here, guys, and then Charlotte says,
well, you know, as far as NASCAR,
that's a good one, Jeff. Randy tried that one on us as well, and we let him on for a while.
Well, you know, as far as NASCAR's ratings are sagging, I think it would be beneficial for both of them, honestly, if somebody did do the double. Because nobody's where they were, I'll put it that way.
That's definitely true.
So make sure you head over to the IMS site and sign that petition, and if only we could get some free Burger King coupons from Smoke for that one.
Nice.
Hey, guess what? It's almost done. We've almost got a second car at Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan, Rodham, Clinton, the Onassis race.
Nice.
And I've hired Eddie Jones as their second engineer, which means the second driver is going to be Hiro Matsushita. Nice. Nah, it's going to be Ryan Briscoe.
That's kind of the way I'm thinking right now, because Ryan Briscoe doesn't have a whole lot of places to land. It seems like Penske has announced that they're going to be running that Hitachi sponsorship that was on Briscoe's car. They're going to be running for Elio. So it's pretty sure that we're not going to see Briscoe back at Penske.
Yeah, this really makes – you know, I'm going to correct myself mid-sentence there, actually. I was going to say it really makes me wonder how Ryan Briscoe is going to get along with AJ, but – if you could have AJ and Mike Conway together last year, and I'm not sure Mike Conway has said more than 7 words in his entire life, then I guess Ryan Briscoe could work.
Yeah. Briscoe's a likable guy. I mean, he could take a backhand from Foyt like anybody.
You know, and he really is. Ryan Briscoe's a likable guy. I mean, shoot, Mike Conway's a likable guy in the encounters I've had with him.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, AJ Foyt has always been known for being such a brash, just shoot from the hip, loudmouth, for lack of words.
Well, yeah. You know, Briscoe, I think he's too nice of a guy. And sometimes on the track, remember that restart?
Yes. Well, I was waiting for them to call off that start, since clearly Ryan Hunter Ray didn't go at the right time, and it really should have been my turn to go in front, and they should have waved off that start.
He was between the cones, man, between the cones.
I got so annoyed at listening to that from him on multiple occasions. It's like, really? You're just saying that they waved the green flag and you didn't think you needed to go?
The problem with Ryan Briscoe is the fact that he is a prototypical Penske driver.
That's a good statement.
Looks good on the camera. He said all the right things. And I'm going to be
honest. He's good for marketing, sure.
He's good for marketing, and a lot of people would argue with me on that. He was the best free agent driver on the market this year. Yes, it's better than Graham Rahal. Definitely better than Graham Rahal, in my opinion.
I think he's more consistent.
Oh, he's leaps and bounds ahead of Graham Rahal. I mean, just all you have to do is look at the results. But the problem, like you said, is he is a bit too nice at times, and you wonder if he does have that aggressiveness. And I'm also going to tell you this, too. He has not been the same driver since the Bots Championship run.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. Yeah, putting that car in the pit wall at Motegi didn't do him any favors, that's for sure.
All by himself as well.
Yeah.
With no help.
Just
goosed it a little too much coming out of the pits and parked it into the wall. And that means it's a flushing championship down the toilet. Speaking of flushing things down the toilet, about Takuma Sato, got to flush this year's Indianapolis 500 down the toilet. Looks like he entered the one side with Foyt after all.
Yeah, looks like there might be something going on there. Marshall Pritz reporting it. There's not a whole lot to the story other than Foyt and Sato are denying it.
Which means it's true.
Yeah, well, it doesn't mean it's true. It just means there might be something there, and they're working on a deal. Certainly be interesting. I mean, clearly, Foyt is a Honda team, and Takuma comes with a lot of Honda love. So this certainly would have fanboy Doug dancing in a seat.
Yeah, I'm sure Doug's doing back.
I'm a fan of Sato, too.
Yeah, well, Takuma certainly is a polarizing guy in the paddock. Everybody seems to like him, but not necessarily like some of his more aggressive driving earlier in his IndyCar career. So,
oh, I'd agree with that. He's got a lot to learn. He's got, you know, basically he needs to learn some patience. You can be aggressive, but to a point.
And, yeah.
It seems to be a common trait amongst Japanese drivers. I mean, look at Kiyomi Komoyashi. I mean, some of the boneheaded moves that he's made, or think about back to Hiro Matsushita or Roger Yasukawa, guys like that.
Yeah.
I mean, they like to make that bold move, and it doesn't always work out.
Yeah. Sometimes those bold moves are needed to, you know, to make it so that your sponsors see you exist.
And, you know, I'm going to say this about Taku on the last lap at Indy. I would have done the exact same thing.
Yeah. There is no fault for him on that. He took Dixon the previous lap in that same spot, in that same situation. The difference was Dixon made it a little easier for him to pass than Franchitti did.
Well, he should have waited just that half a lap though, because that would have been in the best spot. But he just wanted to go right now.
Well, but the other thing is the thing that I thought about, he just took Dixon in that corner. He comes back around on the following lap and tries it again. Maybe his car was just working really well there, and he didn't think he had something for him on the backstretch. So
entirely possible.
I sit in turn three, and I didn't see a whole lot happening there last year. It may have just been the wind conditions or what, but there was seemed like most of the action was in turn one last year. So,
and Taku has one thing that you cannot teach a driver, and that's confidence.
You'll overcome.
He's got plenty of that.
Speaking of confidence, Oriel Servia returns to Panther Dryden Reinbold this season, and he gets to start his season this time without a boat anchor.
Nice. A lot of interesting stuff there. He gets to start a season with a really restful off season, not trying to figure out where he's going to drive. He gets to start a season with the Chevy engine. I mean, he's already money ahead.
And for Serbia, this is the first time in a very long time that he gets to start the season with the same team he finished the last season.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh my, yeah, that's right.
Good situation.
Unfortunately for Oriel, he had that whole Lotus situation last year. He is such a better driver than... And he got some amazing finishes out of that Lotus, too, by the way.
Yeah.
And Lotus lived up to the name that I've heard described of it before, and that is Lotus is an acronym for lots of trouble, usually serious.
Lotus. Anyway, that'll be good for Servia. I am a veritable Servia fanboy. I have a Servia hat. This is good for him. So,
speaking of good, Connor Daly to test with Foyt at Sebring.
This is kind of curious because Connor Daly obviously has stated his stated goal is Formula One. He's not going to turn down IndyCar tests. He's not going to turn down potentially rides in the 500, but he's still gunning for F1. I think his goal right now is to end up in maybe World Series by Renault for this coming season, if not that, you know, because it's significantly cheaper than GP2. And recently, World Series by Renault has put a lot of people into F1. So that's his stated goal. But you got to throw in this potential. If he has some interest from IndyCar that's actually interested in paying his way, maybe there's something there.
And we all know that Foyt is a paid ride, too. So he's not having to bring dollars to that one.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, is this testing just to give him some seat time in the car to see how he reacts with it and then move on forward and maybe get him in for a one-off for the 500?
I've got a couple of feelings on Connor's situation. And first of all, I really feel like Foyt is better known for him as backup plan. Mm. In case the ride in World Series by Renault doesn't work out.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to be dead honest with you. I'm not sure Connor's ready for an IndyCar ride yet. I think he would be better served by a full season in Lotz if he was going to go that route.
Yeah, well, that could be. That could be. But, you know, what could be devastating for his career is jumping too far ahead right now.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, let's be blunt, IndyCar is not not anything on your resume if you're looking to get into F1.
Hey, truly the best place for him to be overall is World Series by Renault or a GP2 program, but unfortunately all the teams that he's been associated with on GP2 or GP3-wise have already named their GP2 drivers for the next season.
Yeah.
Being Carlin and ART.
Yeah.
So there's really just nowhere for him to fit in that ladder, and he would have to go to like a World Series by Renault, or he would have to take a step and go do like a World Endurance Challenge or something like that. But that's still not getting you on the Formula One radar.
Yeah.
So he's kind of stuck right now. It's like if the money doesn't pan out to do a World Series by Renault season, do you take an IndyCar ride and risk falling off the radar, kind of like Joseph Newgarden has on the European side of things?
Yeah.
Or do you pray that you're going to do good enough in IndyCar to really develop a career there?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I mean, he's seriously at a dead end, and I would love to talk to him about that. Because actually, the one I'd really like to talk to about that is his dad. Because his dad really is the one that knows what that's all about.
Yeah, and you have to say, with his dad's contacts, he's in a good situation for developing sponsorship. And if, even with his dad's help, he can't get that sponsorship, that's troubling.
Speaking of troubling, IMS closes IndyCar Entertainment office in Santa Monica. Turbo the Snail, what's up with Turbo? Is he gonna get the axe from Mr. Miles as well? Or
I don't know. This safe? This could be like, you know, that Red Dawn movie that came out recently that initially it was going to be the Russians, and then it was the Arabs, and then it was North Korea. North Korea is taking over the United States. No matter how implausible that idea might be, North Korea actually invaded and took over the United States in that movie.
Yeah.
Oh, so, that's sad and pathetic.
So maybe for Turbo, the next thing you know is they're going to rebadge that, and it's going to be Formula E. No, this is a parting of ways with some of Randy Bernard's methods of promoting the IndyCar series. Even before we see how successful those methods may or may not have been with the release of this movie, was this office strictly set up to be the liaison between IndyCar and this Turbo movie? Or was there more going on? And I think there was more going on because we had, you know, several different things going on with Top Gear ended up doing an episode with which team was it? Dang it.
It was Penske, wasn't it?
No, I'm thinking wrong. It's not Top Gear. It's that Mr. Hammond's Crash Course.
Oh, yeah.
Where he was a pit crew member at Sonoma. That kind of stuff, and then the IndyCar 36, and
you had the two-seater on Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, all of those little placement deals.
I liked IndyCar 36. I thought that was an interesting, get a little more backstory on the guys.
And I agree, I think it was good, and I wonder if closing this office is going to be detrimental to continuing to get more of that stuff, or have they generated enough interest with this office that it will be self-sustaining. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, but I was kind of thinking about some stuff like that the other day when it was announced that they were closing this office. And I keep coming back to, though, what was the real need of having an office in Los Angeles? What did having a physical office there do that you honestly cannot do with today's technology where, I mean, my phone, I can have a Skype video chat with someone from anywhere. I mean, you've got social media, you've got video conferencing. Is there a real need for that presence in Los Angeles? Is this, did Mr. Miles and Mr. Belska sit down and say, hey, we can save some money here by canceling this office, moving these people back to Indianapolis and traveling out there as we need to, but we can do most of this through technology.
Maybe their thought was, having a sales office out there so they'd have boots on the ground to do the old cold calling technique. You know, hey Mike, Mr. Bob Smith from Dinkelmeyer Incorporated is at the door. He says he has a 9 o'clock appointment with you. It's not on your books. Do you want me to let him in?
No, no, we're IndyCar. We don't do anything out of the ordinary.
Anyway.
Yeah, so that's just been kind of interesting, that whole office shutting down. But one definite good thing that has come is the Fuzzy's Ultra Premium Vodka sponsoring the Triple Crown. Win all three, $1 million for thee. Win just two, 2.5 for you. Or 0.25 for you, rather.
0.25. Yeah. 2.5 would be pretty nice. That'd be a pretty sweet deal.
Win all three, you get $1 million. Just win two of them, you get $2.5 million.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense in the IndyCar world these days.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, that $1 million for winning the Triple Crown or $250,000 for just winning two, there are going to be a lot of teams that are gunning for that. Can you think about this? $1 million is a lot of money when you compare it to the team budget. I mean, it's probably like a fifth of some teams' budgets. This has to be like clearly in Panthers' radar right now.
Yeah.
Because they are oval specialists.
Just think what would happen if Ed Carpenter won that.
Fat city.
I mean,
how much Fuzzies will $1 million buy you?
As much as you want, mister.
It's good to see that happening, though, because it kind of, I was, when I read about that yesterday, it really made me think about back in earlier NASCAR times when you had the Winston Million, mm-hmm. and you had the the biggest, fastest, oldest, and longest races, which were Daytona, Talladega, Charlotte, and Darlington. When three of the four Winston cigarettes threw you $1 million, and that was only won twice, actually once by Bill Elliott and once by Jeff Gordon.
Yeah.
Has anyone ever won the Triple Crown in IndyCar, though? That's a good trivia question right there that I don't know the answer to.
I think that the article actually mentioned, maybe it was Al Unser. Oh, well, anyway.
Yeah, maybe Al Unser has captured the three races in a single season when the four-time Indianapolis 500 winner drove to victory in the Jim Hall-owned First National City Travelers Check-sponsored car at Indy, Pocono, and Ontario, 1978. There we go.
In
the article.
I just have one question for you. What is a traveler's check?
Oh, man, I remember actually my parents using those back in the
travel. Yeah.
What's a check?
Yeah, indeed.
And finishing up some IndyCar news there, HVM partners with Status GP to compete in the WEC and the ALMS series.
Yeah. Ongoing bye-bye, saga.
Keith Wiggins.
Yeah, ongoing saga. I think this is just continued. How do you put this? It's bad blood between the HVM and the IndyCar series, and for good reason. HVM was strung along with this Lotus engine, and yeah, we're just keeping track of this because I can't hope for anything but good for HVM going forward, because they were saddled with a bad situation. That bad situation lost them their driver, lost them their sponsors, lost them a ton of credibility, because they were saddled with an engine that was crap, and the IndyCar series did nothing to help them in that. You know, other teams got out, and yeah, they were joined at the hip with Lotus more so than the other teams. However, what clearly was a lackluster effort by Lotus and not meeting their contractual obligations, as in not fielding as many engines as was required, and not really developing that engine, you know. That was clearly on Lotus, and clearly IndyCar could have had some say about that.
So. You know, it really makes me wonder if HVM and/or IndyCar has a leg to stand on with taking Lotus to court for not developing the engine.
I don't know about not developing the engine. I don't know what clauses there are or there would be in the contract, but certainly in the contract the clause was 40% of the field, which Lotus was never, ever, ever even remotely capable of doing.
You know, and I remember another one of the clauses was the fact that each of the engine partners were required to sponsor events as well.
Okay.
And Lotus never sponsored an event.
Yeah, I mean.
Also, Lotus was given opportunities to provide pace cars as well, and they never did.
Yeah. What is interesting, though, the Status GP, they fielded a Lola Judd entry at Le Mans this last year. And I don't think the bad blood is between Judd and HVM. I mean, clearly they're, you know, Judd did what they could with that engine. Judd and Keith Wiggins are good friends. So they did what they could with that engine, but it was not a good situation for anybody involved in there. So what a mess. But this will be good for HVM. They're going to be working on WEC events. They're going to be working on American Le Mans Series events with Status GP. They're going at it with two-pronged attack, having a North America base of operations and then a European base of operations to tackle both series. And then going on into 2014, it'll be interesting to see what they choose to do. Again, we're waiting for the regs to come out for Grand Dam or whatever it will become. And I'm sure everybody's kind of waiting to see what those regs are going to be.
American Society of Sports Car Auto Racing, perhaps? Thanks, John. That was a good one.
Perfect.
A little bit of Mazda Road to Indy news real quick. Zach Veach has graduated to Indy Lights with the Andretti Autosport program.
Yeah, it's good to know that at least one car will be running in Indy Lights next year.
He'll be joined by four Sam Schmidt cars, and that'll be the field.
They might as well just rename it the Andretti Schmidt race, right?
Pretty much. You got two from Andretti because Carlos Munoz is driving for Andretti next year. And then, you know, whoever is coming from the other side there, I don't know. But good for Zach Veach. He's good people. We've had him on the show before and a good person to talk with. So very cool.
Yeah, and Andretti has a pretty good Indy Lights program as well, so that's definitely a good program to be with.
Yeah, and that's one thing I will say about Andretti. Of any team that is involved in the IndyCar, in IndyCar in general, Andretti's the only team that's taken such an active role in every tier of the championship.
Yeah, but you know who's trying?
Yeah, that would be one Mr. Backhanding R.A. Lyon-Dyke on the podium.
Oh man, that's got to be of the IRL days. That's got to be the greatest moment.
Indeed.
Period. AJ Foyt laying the beat down to Ari Lyon-Dyke, and I met Ari Lyon-Dyke at Barber this past year.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was him, I wouldn't have wanted any part of AJ because he's a little bitty dude. But AJ, why don't you slap him? I mean, never mind. Anyway, Foyt has committed to the new Lights program starting in 2014 when the new chassis, new look Indy Lights car made by Dallara, maybe.
Tentatively.
comes online in 2014. I'm very happy to see IndyCar teams committing to the new program, and I'm hoping this is just the start that with the new chassis, where the chassis is actually cheaper than the IndyCar chassis. We'll show some commitment to the feeder series. Let's see. Come on, Ganassi. Come on, KV. Let's get involved in the feeder series.
Yeah, I mean, Ganassi and Penske, you'd love to see them involved in the feeder series, but they're in a lovely spot. They can cherry pick drivers because they have the clout. But then again, you got Andretti sitting there. They've won a championship. They've got a good driver lineup. And who knows where Ryan Briscoe is going to end up next year, but he may end up at Andretti as well. I mean, there are many places that have been mentioned. But, you know, Andretti is going to be an improved effort next year. And then having a good place for their lights drivers to graduate to, already building those sponsor relationships at the lower tiers of the teams with the same sponsors that are on the big cars, mm-hmm. You know, it has to be a win-win. And especially if you can say we've got winning cars in IndyCar, there's that path right into IndyCar for your hand-picked drivers, your Lewis Hamiltons, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. I mean, Hinchcliffe came up through the Light Series, and Charlie Kimball, and Sebastian Saavedra is trying to make it back through. I mean, maybe that's not the best example, but
no, I mean, it's not.
Joseph Newgarden.
Indeed.
Joseph Newgarden came up through there.
Yeah, he came through. Graham Rahal came through there. I think Marco came through. I'm not sure. But what the problem for so long was the fact that the feeder series were kind of a dead end.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got guys like J.K. Vernet and Alex Lloyd and Rafa Matos who absolutely dominate the feeder series and then just kind of get hung out to dry. Alex Lloyd is a prime example of that. I mean, there are a few drivers that have been as dominant in a Lights car as Alex Lloyd, and he can't seem to get a big ride to save his life, even though time after time when he's in the car, he's proven that he deserves to be there. I mean, look at Wade Cunningham. He can't find a solid ride, and he is, of Indy Lights drivers at Indianapolis, he is the best, period. So there's definitely something broken in the feeder series there.
Well, I think if there's the next step is the top, you know, the very top level of whatever series it is. There is only going to be so many seats at the top, and once somebody gets there, somebody with experience and sponsors behind them is always going to get first dibs at that seat. It's very hard to knock somebody down or get them to retire.
Well, you know, that's where NASCAR has an advantage, is because their top series has 42 starting spots. I mean, 43. Mm-hmm. This next tier below that has 43, and the truck series has 36. So,
yeah, that like definitely makes a big advantage, the much bigger, number of vehicles out there, you know, the big teams. and I definitely for IndyCar adding some more. You know, you don't want it to be full on bumper cars out there, but they could definitely use a few more out there.
Yeah. Well, except at Eldora for the truck series, because at Eldora they'll be running 30.
Yeah.
Even that, oh my gosh, it's going to be front to back just constant, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be fun, man. That'll be worth pay-per-viewing if it's that, or sitting down and watching whatever it's on, because I'm definitely not going to make the two-hour trek over to Rossburg, Ohio on a work night.
I would like to point out that at the Snowball Derby at Five Flags Speedway in Pensacola this past weekend, there were 72 starters for that on a half-mile track.
72? You're kidding me.
No.
Wow.
What's even more awesome is the way the race ended with Stephen Wallace throwing a hammer at, I think it was Kyle Busch.
Nice.
Like, an actual hammer at Kyle Busch's car as it's going around the track.
Good stuff.
So it's not people, not only people in the top tiers of NASCAR racing that choose to do that to Kyle.
No, it's their whiny kids as well. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Steven. All right. Star Mazda, change of ownership. Tell me about it, Mike.
Not much going on this other than the Rodriguez family, who currently owns the Star Mazda Championship, has announced their intent to sell it. This sounds like it's been in the works for a while, because they're saying that we'll know ownership details of the series by the end of the week. One potential name is Dan Anderson, who runs the USF 2000 series. So I don't know where this is going, but it just looks like there's a change of hands on the Star Mazda series. And Doug mentioned in an email to me that that's probably... or I shouldn't say probably, it has been given as the reason why the series schedule has not been released yet. So,
and one other IndyCar note that I just thought about, I'd like to hit on real quick.
Yep.
Andrew Craig denied that he has been contacted or has interest in the IndyCar CEO position. For those of you not familiar with Andrew Craig, back in the 90s, he was the CEO of the PPG IndyCar World Series / FedEx Champ Car Series.
Nice.
So that was just a bit of info that came out about that. And no, Rubens is not going to Caterham. That's been shot down. So,
did they contact Craig Pollock?
Yeah, probably.
That sounds like somebody got out their Rolodex on a slow news day like they do in Formula One. Nothing's going on, so bzz, let's call Niki Lauda. Niki, what do you think about the championship this year?
We contacted a liquored up Robin Miller and asked him for his opinion on this. Oh, jeepers. So, gentlemen, I believe we've come to the end of this episode.
Indeed.
Mr. Watzel, do you have anything you would like to add?
No parting shots this week. Keep your stick on the ice.
Mr. Shaw?
No, I think that's it for this week. We'll just have to see what other news comes out as we wait for 2013.
And until we join you again on the next episode, which is Open Paddock number 168 next week, everyone has a good week. And when Mike Shaw will say...
Better luck next time.
Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a good week.